in the wood-lined penthouse apartment of her Lakeview villa at the Action Now convention, Ellen Bywater, the CEO of Medlar Technologies, the world's most profitable personal computing company, tried to pack. Her hands were shaking. Will, her late husband, sat in the wooden easy chair facing the lake view, watching her. He said, "Tough decision." "It's all right for you," she said. "You're dead. You go where I go." "I would have gone where you went even if I were still alive," he said. "Even to the ends of the earth." She smiled at the empty chair. It wasn't that she didn't know he was dead. She wasn't crazy, after all. He was just a hard habit to give up. The Action Now event had been Ellen's idea. Well, not quite her idea. Albert Dabrowski, the ousted founder of her company, had made a huge donation to Action Now, so she had to give a bigger one and go along to the event to make it look good. Will would have put his arm around her shoulders and kissed the top of her head and said, "A sop to your conscience?" She'd have shrugged, and he'd have said, "I prefer your conscience sopping." She found herself still talking to him, able to fill in his side of the conversation almost precisely. Sometimes in their house, she saw him at the foot of the stair, his long body and the folded easel of his angular legs disappearing into the dining room as she walked down the steps. He'd been proud of his legs. At 64, he'd still had good knees for hiking. On the day he died, his knees had been doing just fine. "My mind is going in circles," she said. "I'm frightened." Will understood. Of course she was frightened. No one wanted the world to end. The notification had information about the protocol. She'd written the protocol herself a while back, in the event of disaster. "Ellen," said the protocol on her smart pin, "do not pack all your belongings. Only take small items of sentimental value. Your needs will be provided for." "What about me?" said Will. "Am I a small item of sentimental value?" Ellen told him to fuck off. "Have the kids' protocols been activated?" asked Ellen. The smart pin responded, "Your children have been notified. They are on their way to the transport." "Even Badger?" said Ellen. Will gave Ellen a sharp look. Badger was their youngest, their non-binary child with a radical political stance. Badger had mentioned several times that they did not approve of this whole system, of warnings and private jets and hidden safe bunkers in New Zealand. The protocol was to make no phone calls in this situation. It was no use having a safe and comfortable place to ride out a global catastrophe if everyone knew you were leaving and could follow you. Get the doors sealed before anyone knew you'd left. That was the plan. Still. "Call Badger," said Ellen. An agony of thudding heartbeats before Badger answered the call. Their face, projected onto the wall of the suite, was very close to their screen. They never wanted their mother to see where they were. How sharper than a serpent's tooth it is. Still, Badger looked afraid. This gave Ellen a certain grim satisfaction. "See, your mother still does know something worth knowing." "Are you coming?" said Ellen. "Did you get the alert?" Badger's brow creased. Oh, that little crease they'd had since they were a day-old baby suckling noisily at the nipple. That frown of intense engagement. "Mom, there's a car outside. I don't know what to do." Oh, how Ellen had missed this. Being a mom to Badger had always been tricky, prickly. But her baby needed her. "Get in the car, okay?" "Okay." A pause. Then at last, the depths of the frown. You can bring two people. Tell them to leave their phones behind, okay? Anvil clips, Torx, anything. Tell them it's a vacation. Tell them I'm making you do it and you hate me, okay?" Badger breathed out a long sigh. Their sweet freckles were scattered under their eyes, like stars. "Okay, I'll see you, right?" "Less than a day, darling, I promise." Ellen Bywater had regained herself. Before the car arrived, she sat in front of the mirror, applied her lipstick, and blotted it. She believed in doing these things herself. Will said, You did your own makeup for our wedding. 1989, and you painted the whorls of gold, red, and yellow around your own young eyes. I watched you, like an artist with the fine camel hair brushes and the little golden pots, like a priestess. I looked like I'd been punched hard in the nose, she said. But after all, it's life that punches you till your face is unrecognizable. You're gonna miss seeing me go all to wrinkles, she said to Will. Will said, you already had wrinkles when I died, remember? I kissed your wrinkles. Sometimes you made fun of them. Sometimes we made fun of each other. That's how we were. I always believed in you. Ellen looked at Will, who was not there. What was it they'd believed in, after all? Sometimes she knew what he would have said as if he'd been right there, and sometimes she had to figure it out. She hated these moments, when she knew he was really gone. At last, Will said, you've always done your best for your shareholders and your employees. There wasn't much packing to do. She took her watch. She took her topaz sweater and the gold necklace that always looked so good against it. She took her laptop, her phone, and her Medlar Torque. The idea of packing was itself a small item of sentimental value. Although it was strictly against the protocol, Ellen checked the big survivalist site, named the day. If anything was out there, if anyone knew the big one was coming, it'd be somewhere on the site. But there was nothing out of the ordinary. Troops in the South China Sea, a pipeline explosion in Eastern Europe, the same old prepper rants. Those people didn't know that anything had boiled over. Still, somewhere out there, something was happening. Alarms don't go off for no reason. Somewhere in the world, a situation that used to be just about under control was slipping into not under control at all. A chain reaction. Somewhere in the jungle, there was a tiger.